Stop punishing yourself with bland, chalky protein shakes and fuel your fitness with the best protein in the game at GNC. We've got the hottest brands and flavors that legit taste like cookies, your favorite cereal, indulgent desserts, and more. It's on at GNC.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
When it comes to teaching kids and teens about money, practice makes perfect. That's where Greenlight comes in. With a debit card and money app of their own, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Parents send instant money transfers, create custom chores, and automate allowance, while kids track their spending, set savings goals, and practice money skills they can use today and for life. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
You are listening to Absent Minded, brought to you by Habs Eyes on the Prize.com.
With NFL playoffs right around the corner, NBA season in full swing, BetOnline has you covered with all the up-to-the-second odds, news, and scores. With additional odds, lines, trends, and info on both desktop and mobile, you can access the world's best wagering information anytime. So head there today to get in on the action and see all the updated odds. Remember to use our promo code BELIEVE, that's B-L-E-A-V, to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts.
And here we are, we're back with the forwards, and it's Jason Paul again from Kenya. How are the elephants doing?
They're doing well, man. They're doing well. You don't want to get too close, but you see quite a few, actually. Actually, we see them driving to the coast. You can see them actually on the side of the road, which is super, super cool.
It must be fantastic to have this opportunity. And yeah, I mean, I get excited when I see a moose down the road, but you know,
that's cool too. That's super cool too.
It's another thing to see an elephant and a giraffe, right?
Yeah. It's amazing. When your kids look out the window and they're like, "Hey, look, there's an elephant or there's a giraffe." It's a little bit surreal sometimes.
Snakes, any problems?
Little snakes in the yard, but no problems. We've got a couple cats, so they tend to take care of them.
They're faster than the snakes. I've saw that. I had to look it up somewhere, but you know, cats' reaction time are faster than the snake strike. So yeah, interesting. Yeah, you always learn something new.
We rescued a Kenyan cat, and we kind of joke in the household that he's the king, man. He's not scared of anything.
Well, if he lives on the street in Kenya and survives, he's probably not going to be scared of anything, right? Well, good to hear. That's another thing you should do if you have the opportunity. You rescue an animal; they will be so appreciated throughout their lives. We're here to talk about the offense. Obviously, we have a first line that is clicking a little bit after someone stood up at the draft and before the draft and said, you know, there is an open roster spot next to Caulfield and Suzuki. Has he earned that place now, Slabkovsky?
I think so, man. He looks pretty comfortable there now. He had one of his best games against Colorado statistically. It's almost as if it's exactly what that line needs. I was always worried, and again, I tweeted out quite a bit in the past couple of years that, you know, Cole Caulfield, you know, what an amazing talent that guy is.
That shot he had against Colorado, man.
Yeah. It's so great that he's on the team. And I mean, he's having a bit of a slow year, but let's be honest, he's a tiny forward and... You know, my expectations of him still kind of are like he's not going to be a 5-on-5 domino. our dominant player there. Like he's going to be, they're going to have to carry that guy. Although I'm really impressed with how much he's changed his game this year. And I think maybe that's one of the reasons why the goals are a little bit low. Although his shot percentage is low. I'm just wondering if he's been given the task of, you know, cleaning up his 5-on-5 game. Regardless, you can't then have Suzuki, if you have Caulfield there, you can't have like some sort of, you know, small player that's, you know, a liability on defense if you already have Cole Caulfield on that line. So it's almost as if he's the perfect match there.
And then you got Slavkovsky suddenly playing the 200-foot game, growing into that body we knew he had. I remember people saying at the draft, we took the guy that we expect to be the best guy in a couple of years, not the next year. They got a lot of crap for putting him in the NHL last year, and he grew into the game. He didn't, you know, NHL is not a development league, but it has taken time. In some ways, you can argue the injury was good because he had that long season with World Juniors and with the Olympics and the draft and camps and going straight into the NHL. So he needed recuperation, and he took it in the right way. He worked on his game and areas of the game where he didn't really need to or wasn't very good at. And he knew what he needed to adjust in order to become better. Great to see them gelling. Great to see them working together on the power play as well. We saw that last night against Colorado again. It's a very, very interesting line. And it seems like that line is set for the foreseeable future. The question is it a 1A line or a 1B line?
Yeah, I'm not part of that bandwagon on Twitter and social media that thinks Nick Suzuki is a 1, you know, B. You know, that is a bona fide, that'll be a bona fide top line. It already is, really. So, you know, Nick Suzuki is your Bergeron, whether you want to call him Bergeron light or not. That's his mold. He's, you know, there's reports out there, and I think the same thing, that he should be in the race for the Selke. And again, using some of my charts, you can see that he's putting up the best 5-on-5 defensive numbers on the team by a pretty good margin.
And he plays tough competition.
And he's playing the toughest competition of any of the forwards on the team. Is his offense, is the production amazing? No, but it's almost a point of game. So, you know, consider the team he's playing on. He's providing the best defense and he's providing the best offense. So, you know, usually when you see those charts, even the Edmonton Oilers, you see that the top guys are so amazing. They're providing just outrageous offense, but they're not providing the defense. There's other players on the team that are providing stronger defensive play than they are. So,
or they don't Suzuki's show up in the both. Playoffs, which we know.
Or they don't show the playoffs. Toronto. Yeah. You got to consider that, you know, the Habs really don't have a number one and number two defenseman as you would, as other top teams have, right? When you consider pushing the offense, right? You don't have a Makar, you don't have a Hughes, you don't have a, you know, Fox, Dahlin. So they're really, that is probably the biggest issue on the team. And it's no slight against Gouley. I mean, more of a, like a, you know, superstar,
a headman,
offensive pushing defenseman.
Yeah,
exactly. Maybe Gouley will be that, but he's not quite there just yet, right? So if they had, just imagine if they had Adam Fox on that team, what that first line, what would their numbers look like? You know,
insane.
Maybe not insane, but they would be like among some of the better lines in the league, I think, for sure.
Unfortunately for Montreal, the second line really never got a chance to gel and play together. Kirby Dach out injured and Newhook out injured. And then it had become a patchwork of different players rotating in and out. But you know, you got the first line set, as you say, but what can you see in order to generate some of those, you know, lines for the rest of the season? And are there any trade targets to get rid of in among those other forwards?
Yeah, I mean, I always think about when Colorado won the cup and there's a picture of Makar and McKinnon and, you know, a few of the other core players. There was like five of them. And they're like, these guys are the only guys left from 3 years earlier or 4 years earlier, right? When they were, you know, in the bottom of the league, maybe it was 5 years. So you got to keep that in mind. You can't, again, fall in love. Unfortunately, even guys like with Jake Evans and, you know, you can't fall in love with these guys because they're actually, they're replaceable. So if timing is right and the offer is right, you gotta start moving these guys. It's really that core you keep intact and you, you know, you can find those other players a little bit more easily. So I got to say that, you know, if it wasn't for this first line, if it wasn't for Nick Suzuki and Caulfield, I mean, I'm not sure anybody else is slotted in properly. I think we talked about this on previous podcasts. The way I see a lineup is he really a number one center? Yes. Is he, you know, is that really a second line center? If no, it's a cascading spot. How many it's cascading effects on the lineup, right? So how many spots in that current lineup are actually being filled by a player that should be in that spot? And I would say very few after Nick Suzuki in the first line.
It's probably Doc on the second, you know, we've seen.
Well, he's not there right now, but no. Yes, absolutely. I'm saying right now, right? So it's a real struggle for the team. Maybe Gallagher. I really like how Gallagher's playing. Like, I mean, the guy's got a huge contract and he's, you know, lost any speed he's had. He didn't even have speed before, but I really respect how he's adapted his game and he still plays that crazy game of bringing that puck to the net. You got him. You got Raphael Harvey-Pinard. It was really good to see him come back. I would even argue that Jake Evans right now, like, it's been an up and down season for him. I thought he had a bad start. Then he had a really good section there of 10 or 15 games. And then now with all these injuries, I find that they're really leaning on him and he's kind of wilting a little bit. If you ask me, again, could be injuries. We don't know. And Sean Monahan's getting a lot of props. You know, he had that stretch where he had some good goals and stuff like that, but the underlying numbers are not very kind to him. And the eye test for me is that he looks a little slow out there and, you know, I don't want to no one's listening to me to devalue his asset, but a great player. Like he's so cerebral and stuff, but it's just, you can tell he's, maybe there's a nagging injury there as well, but he's not really hitting a home run. And Josh Anderson, it's just a weird, he's got a weird, performance statistical DNA this year. I mean, he's snake bitten. He kind of looks all over the place. He'll have one good game and, you know, five bad ones. The stats on him, underlying stats, do not look good. It's like some of the worst on the team, actually.
Yeah, and it has been really Josh Anderson and Joel Armia that has been, you know, the thrown under the bus in some ways, especially among the fans. But they have been struggling and they're coming into that age where you're sort of expecting them to start struggle as a little bit as well, because the age drop off is there. It's getting closer. You mentioned Mohan. He's also one of those players, but you know, he brings other assets to the team in regards to, you know, development and, you know,
yeah,
learning from a pro, et cetera, et cetera. Obviously Armia and Anderson are pros and you can learn from them, but they also have a very specific play style.
Mm-hmm. I think Anderson is really a victim of the style that they play. He's more of a Therrien style, right? Like get it up as fast as you possibly can and battle for it in the neutral zone and hope you get a bounce. And that's not the style they play. And he definitely is struggling. So I wonder if other GMs there, I'm sure they do. They recognize that. Doesn't mean that they're going to give full value for him, but some team's going to pick him up with the right style and they're going to be happy. You're going to be happy with him for sure.
It's a player you lean on in the playoffs.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a fan of players that have extraordinary capabilities. Like even if it's just one single thing like speed or size or something, because you can catch lightning in a bottle. And I think that's what GMs are trying to do when they come into the playoffs. You want to get a reclamation project, or you want to get a guy like Anderson, and you're not looking for him to be your best player. When you go to the playoffs, you're looking for a guy to heat up for four games. That's it. Win you a series, and then he can go to sleep for another two or three. That in the bottom part of your lineup or mid, that you're not looking. If you're not a star, you're a player that's in that zone that's got to be semi-consistent, and then that can pop when you want them. And I do think Armia is also that kind of player. I'm a big fan of Armia. I get flack for it on the Twitter for sure. And ironically, his underlying and actual stats are pretty quite good actually on the team. So he's kind of opposite when it comes to the underlying numbers compared to Josh Anderson.
We spoke about one thing that, you know, isn't that, are we going to keep, are we not, Jesse Ylönen, or are we calling him an American nowadays? But you know, one of those players that you might lose as well.
Yeah, I mean, again, it goes back to who are your core guys, right? And we all fall in love with these players. I think he's got some impressive aspects about his game. Like he can just turn on a dime, and I like some of the stuff he does along the boards. But I do have a major criticism of Ylönen's play, and players that move like that have a tendency of finding open space, and that's where they're going to go, right? So fast, you're turning and you're going to go to open space. The problem with that is the other team gives you the space that they want to give you. They don't give you the space they don't want to give you. And I find that a lot of his moves are actually to open ice, which is getting further away from the high danger places. He looks flashy. He looks great, but he's got to find a way. And if there's one coach that's going to, you know, help him, it is Marty St. Louis. So I'm not saying give up on him, but he does need to evolve his game a bit here. He's a bit too perimeter.
But that's something we've been saying since his day in Finland as well. Like he was great in Sonen's entries, but then he dropped the puck off or went along the boards where there were space, and not going straight to the net and creating that havoc and maybe taking that hit that you need to take at certain instances.
Yeah, exactly. And fans, I think, when you watch a hockey game, a player like that sticks out. You're like, wow, that guy's great. Whereas players like Armia, maybe, again, he gets a lot of flack on social media, don't stick out because sometimes he looks slow, but he's a little bit more calculated, and he's a bit more, you know, his plays are to drive to the net. I think Gallagher is probably an example, the extreme example. He's the exact opposite of Ylönen, right? He doesn't have that speed in the move, but everything he tries to do is actually make that play to the hard danger zone. And it doesn't mean to bring the puck and make a crazy deke. It just means you've got to make a move that progresses your team to get to that place. And it could be a pass, it could be a slowdown, whatever. You know, Suzuki is, if you ask me, like a master at that, right? He's not deking to get to the net. He's making every move possible to allow his players to get to those places where he's going to put the puck, right?
We've spoken about Rafael Harvey-Pinard. But then we have the Michael Steffens, the Tanner Pearsons, the Pacetas, Ylönen, Armias, Andersons. There are quite a few players that, you know, are on the wind down or we're not sure what we're having. One guy that is coming up, and obviously you have amazing stats on him because he's only played one game so far, Joshua Roy, or two games. But you know, what have you seen from him so far?
Yeah, I mean, his poor guy, the, you know, first few shifts, I think if I recall that his first shift didn't happen till like 5 minutes into the game or something like that. And I kind of felt sorry for him. But my first impression was, man, he looks slow. Not just slow, but even his strides were kind of short and slow, right? And I think that's the knock against his game anyway. But then I found in the game against Colorado, I kind of appreciated, I guess, his upright style, and he looked a lot more comfortable. Just not enough. There's not enough
data,
you know, data here or time on the ice for me to make a call on that for sure. But again, going back to Ylonen, it's almost like complete opposite players, right? Super flashy, holding the puck versus a kind of guy that's more of a, I'm going to touch the puck a couple times. And
but it's going to be danger, you know, all the time.
That's it. yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I was excited for him to come up. And
not as excited as we'll Matt Rake, because he's really excited about it.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, against Edmonton and then against Colorado, those, that's pretty harsh for your first few games, especially if your knock is, you know, a little bit slow on the ice. So we'll see.
Doing the same as we did with the defense, is the offense underperforming, performing at expected level, or overperforming? Or are you dividing it into the first line and the injuries and the rest?
Yeah, it's a bit unfair, right? Because of the injuries. But I would definitely say underperforming. Again, when you look at a lineup and you look at the raw stats, when I'm saying the raw underlining stats, like the expected goals and even just your actual goals rates, you like to see a player playing on the third line and outperforming his matchups, right? Yeah. And that we're not seeing any of that in this current lineup. So we're seeing the first line performing extremely well, and we're seeing the rest just dogging it statistically. So whereas the defense is a little bit the reverse, right? So the players, the D-men that are getting the big ice against the other team's best players are not, the stats are not there, but you got some guys like Struble and Jacki in a secondary role that are really outperforming the other team's players in that role. So yeah, a little bit disappointing. But, you know, I think it's probably the power play that's maybe uber disappointing.
But that has been since, like, you know, 2010 and the Calamari trade. Yeah.
But it's signs of life. And if we can take just a minute to talk about the power play. Yeah, I mean, I think, and I've put it out on Twitter a few days ago before the Edmonton game, I think the big problem on their power play is the quarterback that, you know, I think Matheson is love the player. And I think he's made some great moves on the power play, but I think he's taking way too much of a big role. He ends up being the executor of the play, whether it's taking the shot or making that final pass for the one-timer that finishes the play, right? And that cannot be him, in my opinion. That has to be Nick Suzuki. So you got to run that power play, in my opinion, and it should not, the execution of the play has got to come off Nick Suzuki's stick. And we saw in the past two games that when he's running the play, it does. Is there finger pointing for Nick Suzuki? I think maybe a little bit. I think he kind of needs to take control. So we'll see. We'll see. And I think it'll be if Hudson comes soon, I think we might see a big improvement there.
You mentioned it, and I was going to talk about it. You mentioned Hudson coming up, but is it the lack of a good defensive QB that to run that power play or help run the power play that needs to happen for it?
Yeah, I'm not sure it has to be that defensive QB. But I think it helps. But I think what more of the mistake that they're doing now is, like I said, is that they're allowing Matheson to take a bigger role than he probably should be. And again, I hate digging on players because I love Matheson. I think he's a great skater and he makes some crazy moves, but it's all relative. If he's the 20th best QB in the game, then you should have the 20th best power play. Doesn't mean he's shitty. It just means that you don't want to be 20th. You want to be middle, at least middle of the pack. So for that to happen, you, I don't know. And I make that argument for, you know, Riley on the Toronto Maple Leafs, right? So it's, again, it's not about, is he a good defenseman? Are you guys, are these, is Matheson a great defenseman? Yeah, they're amazing. But if you're going to go head to head with Fox and Makar, and that's your end state because you got to beat those guys in the playoffs, you're, if you're going to run a gun against the, that style with them, you're going to end up on the wrong side. So you have to adjust. If you don't have the manpower, you need to adjust it. And when the Habs went to the finals, I think that was a great example. I think a lot of people maybe don't love that. They got lucky and all that kind of stuff. But what I really appreciated about that that run was they didn't try to turn Jeff Petrie into, you know, Cale Makar. They, that whole top four defenseman shut her down and didn't play any risky hockey. And I don't think people like that, but that was the choice that the coaches and the team had to make because they weren't, they knew they didn't have the roster to go toe to toe, right?
No, you need to play with the players you have, not the ones you want to play, and you can't force a square peg into a round hole either. You know, you need to adjust and make those plays and set up those plays. The question is, though, joking about it, since the Calamari trade, you know, have and had Subban for a while, and then everyone knew that they're going to go to Weber, but Weber was, you know, shooting like a space rocket. It seems like it's a one-trick pony, whereas other teams maybe have two or three tricks, and we saw it against Colorado. We have seen it with in five-on-five play with the new first line with Suzuki, Caulfield, and Slavkovsky, and they're starting to gel on the power play as well. That should really improve it, right? And maybe with the shot that Slavkovsky and Caulfield has and Suzuki as well, you open up to that three-pronged attack and you know, you put Hudson there and you put Chekai there or you put someone else there, you're going to have more quality shot takers and somehow that should really improve the power play.
Yeah, without a doubt. It's really is about skill, and it's not just about skill. I think at the beginning of the season, one of my criticisms about the power play was even after they shot it, they were unable to retrieve the puck. It's like, you know, one and done. And you see these good power plays, you know, they have a big presence, maybe a physical presence in the corner. When you're just putting out players that are not that great along the boards, you're going to lose those battles. So you don't even get a second chance. And I think that's an underrated bad thing about their power play. I really think they've cleaned that up. I haven't done it yet, but I want to do a tweet about the best board players on the forwards on the team. And I think Caulfield has taken his level of ability to fight and battle on the board like way better than he was last year. Suzuki is in the realm of getting to be one of the better players in the league along the boards. I'm a massive Joel Armia fan on the boards. I think he's one of the best in the league on the boards. And that's an underrated part of the power play. You still have to fight and work, right? So yeah, you need the skill. You need to continually adapt. I'm confident in Suzuki and Caulfield because they're students of the game that they need to keep changing and adapting. If I was running the power play, I would probably mix up, that point defenseman, Matheson, just so the other team sees something different, just so your own team sees something different. And it's kind of like if the coaching staff, like I do, believes that Matheson is actually taking too much away from Suzuki, then you take him off. Even if he's doing a good job, it's not good enough. And maybe you should try Harris there or Struble or whatever, or even a forward, you know.
Or maybe they should just change the power play coordinator.
Yeah, maybe. I know there's a lot of people on Twitter that are hooked to get them. I think there might be something there, you know. Analytics is not just about expected goals and charts and stuff like that. It is about, you know, the business of the game and understanding, you know, your probabilities of winning and when you pull the goalie. Is it at 3 minutes? Is it at 1 minute? Information and analytics can tell you that kind of stuff. And I'm still a bit surprised with the Canadians on that. Maybe they're a little bit disorganized with that kind of stuff. they even Mike Johnson last season, he kind of gave a little poke at the coaching staff last season because they didn't have any set plays. It didn't seem that they had any set plays on draws, right? And that is a super popular thing to do now in the NHL. And if you're a team that doesn't have that, that's kind of strange to me. And then now this season, you can see that they actually do have some set plays. And the only reason I'm saying that is because you can extrapolate from, if they don't have set plays, well, then maybe they don't look at doing set plays on the power play or are looking at things. Maybe they just put players out there. Yeah. Like Stevenson on the penalty kill, you know, again, don't want to rag on a player, but the penalty kill is a super important part of the game. It seems to me that some coaches just put out players because they're on the fourth line. And if you don't put them on a penalty kill, then they're not even going to get 10 minutes of ice. But that's not how you should divvy up the ice. Like, that is a penalty kill, such very extremely important. So you got to put your best players out there. Even on the penalty kill, of course, you have to manage the ice times and stuff. But if Suzuki could do another couple minutes a game, that guy should be on the penalty kill. He's, in my books, he's one of their best penalty killers.
There you have it. We'll listen to Jason Paul for insights. We'll listen to him explain analytics for us. Anything you want to contribute here before we sign off from Kenya?
No, just give me a follow and I'll argue with you on Twitter.
Or, you know, you should never trust the X, right? So
the X, I keep calling it Twitter, but
I do as well. It's great to have you on. We really, really appreciate it, Jason. I'm stoked to see you with a suntan and you know, a beard that is getting longer. You're going to join CC Top in a couple of months. But thank you all for listening. This is part two of the halftime review. We're going to the three-headed monster that is the Montreal Canadiens goalkeeper situation in the next episode. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you.
This episode was brought to you by Bet Online.
Punishing yourself with bland, chalky protein shakes and fuel your fitness with the best protein in the game at GNC. We've got the hottest brands and flavors that legit taste like cookies, your favorite cereal, indulgent desserts, and more. It's on at GNC.
Hey parents, Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early, so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.